Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Roundnet Legends podcast. I almost said Lefty on Two podcast. Nope, this is Roundnet Legends. If you're new here to the podcast, I'm Mike White, the host and a part of Lefty on Two Roundnet. This show is all about the legends of Roundnet, the players, of course, as well as the stories and the rich history that we had. Today, I'm really excited about the guests we have. If you're watching on YouTube, you already see it. I guess if you're on everything else, you've already clicked it, so you know who it is, but I'll explain like you don't. This player is a certified legend, has been playing for a very, very long time, and that's not just me calling him old, very experienced. 18-time SRA event champion. I'll throw an extra one in. You'll get one in 2021. He calls himself the Stephen A of Roundnet and can crush it on the realm and also in the commentary booth. Of course, who I'm referring to is Dylan Fogarty. Welcome, Dylan.
Thanks, buddy. I'm super excited for this.
Yeah. How are you doing today? Are you ready to get into it?
Man, I'm ready to talk some Roundnet history. It's one of my favorite topics, not just about myself, but just the whole development of the sport. So I'm really excited for doing these types of podcasts.
Thanks. Yeah. And as I said, you've had a long time in it. Your early days, usually when I talk early days to people, it's, you know, 2014, 2015, but your early days are way before that. So can you just take me back, your first experience with Roundnet?
Yeah, man. It's one of those things that kind of just fell into my lap when I was in high school. So for you guys watching that are a little younger than me, high school for me was 2006 to 2010. My friend group was just very active. We were always doing sports. I was a three-sport athlete in high school. But outside of that, we would play volleyball over the summer. You know, we liked being active. So one year, one of my friends got a spike ball set. This was kind of right around the time where Chris Reuter, who ironically was from the town over. So I grew up in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and Chris Reuter was in Mount Prospect, Illinois. And so I think they heard about it that way. I'm not sure still to this day where they got the set, but we got a set. We looked up the rules, started playing. And then we realized that every summer at a very popular park near my house, they had been hosting a spike ball tournament. I think the first year was 2006. So my first tournament was 2007.
Almost 15 years ago.
Oh gosh. That's so weird.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Because I primarily I don't know why I always envision telling these stories around 2015. So it's like, I've been playing for 8 years, but now, it's getting up there. Mm-hmm. But that was my first experience really with spike ball. It was called spike ball at the time, in 2007, 18 tournament. All of them were high schoolers that I went to class with, and Chris Reuter was there. So played one tournament in 2007, one tournament in 2008, and then one in 2009.
Mm-hmm. I know that's very long ago. Do you remember kind of the rules you played with?
Yeah, it was really, really different. And the biggest rule change at that time was I showed up to this tournament and was blown away that there were hard serves allowed. It was so frustrating for me because my friend group, you know, and I think at the time it must have been the rules that gentleman serve was the way to play. They said you start off by just hitting it off the net. Yeah. And so I showed up and my friend group, we were all fairly athletic, and so we thought we would do really well. And then we had these, I remember they were on the basketball and football team from Prospect High School, which is what I went to. And they were just slinging serves. And we were like, no chance, no chance. So I believe I lost first round, my first tournament. But it was also weird because the park that I played at was a hybrid of grass and sand. So, and we had never played in sand. There was a sand pit for a volleyball net. So they had taken the volleyball net and some sets were in the sand, some were in the grass. Mm-hmm. And I remember just trying to move in sand playing spike ball for the first time. It was
it's
the
impossible.
Hardest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And especially now, you know, as I approach
still
the age of, I was going to say, it gets harder as I approach the age of 30 to move in sand. But I remember those two things very, very distinctly, is that, you know, there wasn't gentleman serve, which blew my mind, and that people played this in sand because I hadn't seen it to that point.
And so when you went, this is going to just jump forward, you were a separate group of friends. You weren't friends with who we consider the origin group today, right?
Not at this time. No, yeah. That was when I kind of refound the sport, which I'm sure we're going to get to, but to kind of get there, from 2010 to 2014, I went to the University of Minnesota, and I didn't touch a spike ball that entire time. So we're talking the old days of origin, Tom Cortese, Patrick Drucker, even, right. Avery Frain. That was after 2014.
So you went to like one every summer. So was this just kind of a thing you did? Was it like, hey, every year I go to a spike ball tournament? Did you think more of it? Or was it just something that you did every year?
Exactly. Like, especially at this time, it was like if your friends just came up to you and said, hey, a bunch of us are going to the beach to play volleyball. And you're like, I don't play volleyball, but I'll go. Like, it was literally like one tournament a summer. And then occasionally, like maybe once a week, if that, we would just be like sitting in the basement playing video games. You know how it was in high school over the summer. And we'd be like, hey, you want to play spike ball on today or whatever? And we would just do it. And other than that, there was no thought.
Really? And so were there people there that you think like took it seriously? Right. Cause clearly you didn't have you're a competitive person, but you didn't think of like, oh, I'm going to be great at this. Right. Were there people there that you think did, or were they all kind of probably on the same page as you?
Honestly, I wasn't really sure. I knew, again, everyone who was playing in the tournament went to my high school, and I just knew them as really, really athletic kids. And by virtue, you talked about competition, like they were competitive. I still know. There's no way he would ever listen to this, but Sam Pope was like one of the most athletic guys in my high school, and he made the finals. And I was just like, yeah, that makes sense. Like he's just really good at sports. So, but I don't think I even really paid attention. But at this point, as you mentioned, it's almost 15 years ago, and so that's a little hard to remember what my mindset was that time. Fair.
And then so let's fast forward. So bring me back to this 2014 where you're coming back.
Yeah, so this is where probably one of my favorite stories, honestly, of my life, just in terms of what it ended up leading to. But so I graduated from University of Minnesota, May 2014, and my entire senior year, my best friends and I, one of which was Mike Hammersley, we were planning a trip out of the country. We were debating between Europe and a lot of different places. We ended up going to Southeast Asia for a month. So we went to Cambodia, Vietnam, and Thailand. And when we were on that trip, a big thing we were talking about is we just graduated college. We were all athletic, but we realized like this was kind of the end for us in sports. Like we had all been three sport athletes in high school and in college. We played intramurals. I interned for the basketball team. So I was always around sports. And now we were entering the workforce. And I don't know how we came across spikeball on the internet, but we were just, I remember the hostel we were in. It was really small. There was like 20 people, and we were just on, we brought one laptop, and we came across spikeball, and we saw, holy crap, wait, there's a season schedule here. Because this was 2014. Right. This was when, you know, they were doing the majors in New York and Chicago.
Yep.
So some of those, maybe Nashville was one at the time as well. And we were like blown away because we hadn't even thought of the sport since 2009. Years, right? Yeah. It was crazy. And so we all just kind of made this little pact that when we got home, and I think we were going home in a week or so, like we should check this out because we all wanted to have that competitive outlet after we were done with college. And we liked playing spikeball, but like I said, it was such a distant thought of like, could we even compete in this? Could we travel? And this was not even a thing in 2009. But looking at this page, that was like, wow, we could travel to not only, you know, other states, but there were some local tournaments on there as well. So we just happened to come across it. So we came back in the summer of 2014 and practiced a little bit. Mike and I happened to be the two best at the time. And so we formed our team. Naturally, the first team name was Adventure Time. Which is old show. I don't even know what network it was on, but old show. So we were Adventure Time. Then we became known as the Koala Hunters. So 2014, we played two local tournaments and we won both of them, which of course we thought that, oh my gosh, like we are the best teams in the small Illinois. Fun fact, by the way, Dock City was one of the teams that we played in, really? In 2014 at this small tournament. Yeah, we went to one in Illinois and then just across the border in Indiana. And then we went to 2014 Central Regionals. Mm-hmm. And that was the first experience with, holy crap. I mean, this was a big tournament, relatively speaking. I'm sure, I don't remember at the time, maybe 30 or 40 teams, but we were used to like 8 teams, maybe. Like I had never played a round of 16 match until 2014 Central Regionals. So for you guys who are listening, it used to be West, East, and Central. Central was like 20 some states. It was held in Nashville.
It was huge. Central was huge.
It was massive, absolutely massive. And so we went out there and we saw, wow, there's a lot of people who are really good. And you know, we played, we were doing really well. We actually played Nashburg in pool play, played pretty close, but lost. And then I remember after that, my first interaction with like a guy who was like, oh wow, this is a spike ball guy, was Scott Wilson, who came up to Mike and I and we're like, you guys are really good. And we were like, oh, thank you. Because prior to the tournament, you know, you walk around, especially in the early days, there were a lot of people that, guys, like, that's Nashburg, that's Scott Wilson, that's Joel Graham. They're really, really good. Because we still didn't know really about the history to this point. Because, you know, 2013, they had Spikapalooza, and they already had Chicago had already passed in 2014, where we're at right now, because we're in September.
So you didn't, got it.
Yeah, so we really didn't know much about the history. Yeah. So then big monumental moment was in the round of 16. We beat Artificial Flavors. Everyone was telling us we might as well. Like, I had kids come up to me and tell me to pack my bags before the match. And I was like, hi, my name's Dylan. What are you talking about, bro? And so it was really close, but we took him out. Ended up beating, I believe, Scenic City. Yeah, Scenic City in the round of 8. And then my favorite story, the most humbling experience, is we got – thrashed by Life from Mars. Kyle Kirkman and John Schumacher. And by thrashed, 21-12, 21-10. Those were the scores. I still remember them 7-8 years later.
Wow.
And it just totally defeated me. And then we ended up losing to V2 in the third place game. So we missed out on the power pool, but that was like the introduction to not only we're not the best team in the world, but also
getting fourth at like this legit tournament, you know?
It honestly felt pretty good, especially because, you know, we knew that the competition at this tournament was much more elevated than what we were playing.
People had jerseys, right?
Yeah. I saw the Artificial Flavor jerseys and I was like, and still to this day, top 10 jersey of all time. I'm just going to say that's my first hot take of the podcast. So, but I mean, there were people who really knew how to play. There's still a highlight video, guys, if you want to look it up. And you can see like my lefty hits from 2014 were just so amazing.
It's so funny because like in that video, everyone looks the same, but it's just worse. Right, like you're oh, that's definitely Dylan. I can tell by the way he plays, but it's just so much worse. Like, right? Don't you have terrible like I think actually lefty on twos or like just really bad hits? Or no, your big thing was the big windup and the drop right into them.
Yeah, I felt super confident in that, especially in 2015. Once you know I started to practice more, but I certainly had that at regionals. But if you look at my lefty hits, I mean, I like weekly, I dropped almost every time because I just didn't have the coordination with my left hand. And then there's that cringy, like if you look at that video, that, like every time I score a point, there's that cringy, I go, I do like a little fist bump. And I'm like, what was I doing, man? Like it was a side out sport even at that time. But you're right. I mean, that was my first experience to like, wow, there are people from other states that will come, will travel. This is a regional tournament. We were playing for a spot in a power pool at nationals. And we weren't even planning to go to nationals because it was in California, but going there and just being part of the community. And then afterwards, a lot of people came up to us and are like, wow, are you guys going to go to nationals? And Mike and I looked at each other and we're like, I guess we are, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure that happens today, but back in the day, I think that was some of the cool, we had the same thing where we did well at Summer Spike and everyone's like, you guys got to go to Chicago. And we're like, I guess we do, right? Like I also had a similar moment that day where like, all right, we didn't beat, so it was Moist just beat V2 Drucker and Tezzy. And I was, hey, Tezzy, you got any advice? And he goes, like, just, he said similar to, like, pack your bags. And I was like, the same thing. And I was like, what? Hey, I mean, they did beat us, but game one, I think we were leading most of it. So afterwards, I was like, right after, I was just like, damn, why'd you dismiss us so quick? And obviously, you know, it's easy to say 7 years later, there's no way we would have beat him that day. But I remember at the time I was like, you don't even know me. We've been before, and you're just like, they're going to beat us? What is happening? Yeah, it was pretty funny. All right. So after that, you guys clearly did go to Nationals, right?
So we did.
Were you guys all in? You're like, all right, yeah, let's do this thing.
Yeah, and I tell this story to family, to friends, like 2014 Central Regionals was, I just became addicted after that. And not just in terms of going to tournaments. I think that I've told this story. A lot of people know this about circa 2015, 2016, Dylan. I still say it, like, I was the hardest working player out there. I would practice 2 hours a day, and I'm not exaggerating, 2 hours a day, hitting, serving, setting. And the reason I did that is because, again, if you rewind 3 months, it was actually pretty sad for me that I recognized that my athletic career in my mind was over. Like, I wasn't going to play any sports post-college. And not only were sports important to me, but my major was sport management. Like, right currently, present day, I'm a personal trainer and I love movement in general. So that acknowledging that I wasn't going to be a competitor was really challenging. And now that was all off the table. Now it's like, oh my gosh, you're telling me that I could travel and compete at the highest level of a sport? Like, that blew my mind. And I took that feeling and I really went after it all the time. And I practiced a ton in between Central Regionals and Nationals. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we flew out there. And another like huge moment in my career was 2014 Nationals at Santa Monica, the day before Santa Monica Pier, and just watching Sean Boyer and Skylar Bowles walk up to the group. We had a play day before, which is similar to how we do now, and just watching them and staring in awe. And just like when I walked up to 2014 Central Regionals, and I was like, wow, these guys know how to play. I mean, 2014 Nationals pre-play day, next level. I mean, we had John Schumacher there. We had Pete McCarthy there, which I know a lot of people don't know that name, but Pete McCarthy, first legitimate ambidextrous player. It was
unbelievable. If you watch videos of him, and I saw him in person. I saw him in person earlier in that year. They came to Boston. They won Boston 2014. And
okay.
Like, this player looks impossible to dig. Right, you watch them play. One, they have the confidence because they're coming out from the West Coast. But you're just like, there is no way these guys are losing. They like,
well, and you talked about, so my big windup that I had. So Pete McCarthy would do that all the time, where he would wind up with his right. He was right hand dominant, but then he would like hit really well with his left,
like, and you were just like, wrap, like a mini lefty wrap.
Exactly, and you were just like, literally, like, I mean. And it's sad that he didn't play as much. Otherwise, I think like he would have won a ton and people would have learned so much from him because it was incredible. But watching all of those players at the play day, you know, again, it kept elevating at like how many people were drawn to this sport. And admittedly at the time, just that I felt intimidated. Like, I felt very intimidated being around these players, especially because you mentioned the West Coast, which present day, don't get me wrong, the West Coast has still got great players, Preston Bizes, you know, and others. But at the time, circa 2014, 15, 16, the West Coast arguably had the top 3 to 5 teams almost always. Like, they, you know, they very, very, very solid players over there. And so that was just like that introduction there.
I want to say something that they were the top teams, but also how Logan always jokes now. He says, if you want to be power ranked, you got to have like a good Instagram. And I think, but I think like back then, right? Like Chico and Beavers, they were the ones posting the videos. So they are the names, right? Them and Nashberg and Life from Mars. Like, those are the only teams, you know, because they're the only ones posting videos and they're all good. So like the West Coast had that side of thing. They were really good, but also if you were into Spikeball at the time, I guess I say Spikeball because it was. You would Google,
right.
Spikeball, you would Google Spikeball, you would search Spikeball on YouTube, and all you would see was Nashberg, Chico, Beavers. right? That's all you would see. And so when you show up, you're like, yeah, like these are the celebrities, really.
And and that's such a great point. And I do believe that still exists to this day. And every once in a while in the SRA Facebook group, you'll see it in the thread is that, you know, that it's almost like, yeah, it's just that intimidation, because especially with those videos, I mean, what are those videos? They're highlight videos. Yeah. Yes, they're really good players, but they're showing like, here's our best rallies from that day. And I think whether it was youth, whether it was, we just didn't understand it at the time. Like I remember watching those videos and I was like, oh my God, these guys play this way all the time. And that clearly isn't true. But yeah, man, like that was such a great experience that whole day. We ended up taking out, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name right now. Interracial Lovin', which was a top six team. They were in our pool. We took them out in pool play. We unfortunately got lined up with them in bracket. Beat them in bracket. Dennis is still one of my favorite guys in the sport today. I know he doesn't play anymore and hasn't for a while, but he's awesome.
I want to know how many names get dropped in this show that people are just like, who are they? You even say V2 and I'm like, that's Drucker, but people probably don't know that's Drucker.
No, people don't know that. And it's also the evolution of just how the community evolves. Like back in the day, everyone knew who Tom Cortese was. Everyone, you know, he was very ingrained and did a lot. He did a lot of work for Spikeball. He worked really closely with Chris Reuter. And nowadays, I mean, I would even say you go back to 2018, there's a lot of people who are like, I have no idea who that is. So, you know, which is as someone who is there from the start and is there in 2021 and will be there in the future, I think that's like, that's really cool. But at the same time, it's also that, oh man, like things really are changing and players are dropping and new players are coming in and yeah. And you see that those dynamics shift. But yeah, I mean, Dennis, I wish he kept playing, man, because he was a big lefty, really strong. And we had so much fun playing them. Unfortunately, in the round of 16, got matched up from Life from Mars again. Fared a lot better this time. We pushed him to extras game one, lost 21-19 game two. And so Mike and I at the time had taken that as a win, because literally the month before,
yeah,
they wiped the floor with us. Mm-hmm. And then of course, you know, that was the year that I believe they recorded for, what was it, Comcast Sports, and
yeah.
and they had the Beavers and Chico in the finals. And I love Buddy, I love Bryce, but you could just tell like Chico is just on this next level. And it wasn't really close, no matter what the scores say. So that was
yeah.
And then dude, it wasn't. And then that was it, right? Like that was when I got in contact with Chris Reuter more. Shortly after I was invited to the board, I was talking with Skyler all the time and I was like, no, this is gonna be it. Like I am going to be a Spike athlete.
Yeah.
I was all in.
Yeah. And so this will be a big one, I think. We'll talk. But 2015, right? Like I mean, right, it went from you going to these two tournaments to like 2015 was something completely different. So,
yeah,
you know, I'll set from my perspective, right, I didn't attend regionals. I wanted to. I was away. And then I was following along nationals. And truthfully, the only time I saw Koala Hunters was in Nashberg's highlight video, right, or like from our highlights video. And then, you know, but you come out next year. And, you know, it's early in the season. I'm over here planning to go to all these tour stops. And you just keep seeing, oh, this Origin Elite team keeps going to every tournament in the Southeast. And they keep winning and they keep doing all this stuff. So I guess we can go into the formation of Origin. But I'm more interested, I guess we can start there. I'm more interested in seeing, like, as you say, you were all in. Like, where that really led, because you guys were doing so much in
yeah.
So let's start with Origin. So like,
yeah,
that compressed, you know, happen over the off season.
Yeah. So I actually think they work in tandem, your two questions,
okay.
Because so after 2014 nationals, we lost in the round of 16, but V2 actually cracked the top eight. They were Spikeball Elite that year. And V2 again, Patrick Drucker, who still plays, Tom Cortese. They were from my hometown. They were from Arlington Heights. We had known of them, but the two local tournaments that Mike and I won, they weren't there. So at at Nationals at Santa Monica 2014, there's a picture of the four of us as the sun is setting. And that was when we decided to create a club. It was Tom Cortese's idea. He was the mastermind behind it, but he said, wouldn't it be super cool if we created like this powerhouse in Chicago? You know, he's like, we know some guys who like playing. I'm sure you guys like, because our friends, like Mike and I were the best, but our friends were pretty good. Mm-hmm. So we're like, let's create this powerhouse so that we can not only travel together, but we can practice together. And we, you know, kind of took that and used the off season. You know, Tezzy and I had meetings and we developed a practice schedule and we recruited players. We had contracts, and yeah, leading into 2015, we chose the name Origin. Every single player who was in our organization had to lead with Origin and their teammates. So we had Origin Elite, Origin Dominance, were our top two.
Origin Unleashed.
Origin Unleashed was number three. That was at the time Chris Hornacek and Mike Zagone. And we were 7-8 teams deep. And we had the same jerseys and we were all just psychotic about it. We practiced three times a week, and that development from October to, yeah, when the season started in 2015, you know, February and March were those early tournaments. We were just playing nonstop. When the weather was cold outside, we moved our practices to racquetball courts. And we collectively also kind of built this reputation as being very hard hitters, like very good hitters. And that was just something that I still give Drucker a lot of credit for, because he was just, he's always been so powerful. And I wanted to emulate that, because at the time, like hands down, Drucker was the best player, hands down.
Right.
And so, yeah, we started Origin, and then we traveled together. I don't know if people know this, we even had like a separate credit card we opened. We had wow. Membership dues. Yeah. We like allocated for travel. Like we really went all in to this thing. And so, yeah, that's how Origin was born. And because of that, it just fueled our passion to travel more. You know, Mike and I were full-time in the world, so we didn't have college. We didn't have tests to study for. We went to our jobs, and then on the weekends, we could travel. And that's what we did.
Truthfully, I think, you know, mentally also, once you're all that invested, right, you also kind of lean – it's part of your identity, right? You lean into it. You guys, like, we are our Roundup players. We go through. But something I wanted to talk on, which I wanted to mention it, but you just said it, right? So I'll get into a different question in a sec, but right, you called them practices. And truthfully, at the same time, right, I had my group Spicy, right? Or that formed a little later in the year. And when we were talking to you guys and Chris Hornacek said, like, when do you guys hold practice? We were like, what the hell is practice? We play a bunch. What is calling it? And I think, you know, like, right, we played a ton and we tried to get better, but it just showed the difference in you guys calling it practice and things like that, like taking it to a much different level than a lot of people were at the time. And
yeah. And I think to clear the air, it largely was glorified scrimmage.
Yeah, I understand. It was just the name. It's just the name. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think like that something about, if you guys have met me, know me, like I have a relatively serious personality. Tom Cortese also has a relatively serious personality. And so when we were building this, like, even though we were having so much fun, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, it's funny to look back on our meetings when we were like, I was 22 and Cortese, he might've been a teenager at that time. I mean, we had agendas, like they're really formal. So we were just so focused on building this group. And to be honest too, I am still surprised at how far we pushed it. And the fact that, you know, I think it was really that our passion for the sports and just to building that group of guys and later girls as well was just, I mean, we were all really close. We spent a lot of time together and we built that community that was almost like a subset of what the Spikeball community is, right? Like we obviously compete, we obviously travel in tournaments, but what I love about what I call the glory days, which is 2015, 2016, 2017, you can wrap it in, is like everyone was just friends. And like, we just like traveled the country to see friends and compete. But you know, we also were very, very passionate about growing it. So,
So I think that's interesting because, right, I think, you know, as your experience, you were definitely in it. And, you know, I think that was more experience later. But truthfully, from my perspective, I remember, right, when I first, my first opinion of Origin was they take this very seriously. They're not really interested in hanging out with anyone else. You know, like I remember, right, I think we first interacted, you know, at, it was like the Summer Spike after party. And I think it was just by chance, we were like sitting at the same table. And then I started talking with you, the Origin guys, and it was great. But I think before that, you know, you guys were kind of in your own bubble. And I think, you know, during times where also, you know, the community can be a little clicky. And also I was freaking 19, you know, like we get the vibe of like, oh, these guys don't want to hang out with us. And I think obviously as the year went on, and especially in 2016, 2017, that relationship was different, but 2015 kind of felt a certain way around Origin. Do you think that was kind of a fair assessment?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, there were a lot of people who thought we were super stuck up and super reserved. And I mean, to an extent, I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but in a lot of ways, that analysis is not far off. You know, I think one of the things that I personally, and this is a personal thing, because a lot of guys in Origin did not struggle with this in the same way that I did. But I was very, very, very competitive in 2015 and 2016. And that was another thing, you know, again, I'm sure you were going to get to this, but the villain of Spikeball was like, that was my nickname for a while. And in hindsight, it, you know, it was completely fair. Like I really was super competitive. I'm naturally an introvert, especially if I'm uncomfortable, you know, around people, new people. You know, I kind of go into my shell, especially in a group setting. I'm much better in one-on-one, but a group setting. So that analysis was not untrue in the sense that, you know, we were a little reserved. You know, we were more comfortable around our own group. But I agree that in 2016, like definitely, you know, traveling more and just having more conversations certainly helped. And then when I came back to play in 2018, I remember telling Chris, like, that was my focus. Like I was no longer trying to be this ultra competitive guy that would like upset my friends at tournaments. Mm-hmm. I was going to have fun. And if we won, great. If not, you know, in the moment, I still had a competitive gene. I still would get upset sometimes, but when I would zoom out, I'd be like, you know what, this is a different mindset going into 2018 and beyond. But again, we'll get to that. So I agree with your analysis of Origin though in 2015. Yeah. But
and then I almost wanted to edit this because I don't want to say it the wrong way. When I was talking to Jared in the other episode, I think we talked about Origin Elite, and we said I said they were the number three team that year. Truthfully, the real thing is we didn't have a power ranking back then. And all I remember is Origin Elite was really, really good in winning everything over here. Chico was winning everything else. Beavers didn't travel. And I remember
yes.
The whole conversation was, is Origin Elite number two? Beavers are better. Yeah, Beavers are better. And so I said three, but I want, like, that's my clarification. But like, how did you guys feel like during that year, right? There was tons of tour stops. We didn't have power rankings. And like, how is that feeling? Are you like, did you feel like you're the clear number two and we just want to beat Chico? Or like, and did you have a goal of being that number one team?
No, in fact, I personally have always been pretty pragmatic when I evaluate like the talent of the team I'm on. And I did not think we were the number three team. I think we traveled a lot and we beat teams that we knew we could beat. And that's what became very clear early on in the season is that, again, at the time, my perception was Midwest, East Coast, Southeast, we've got that on lock. It's about the West Coast. And so, because even early in 2015, Mike and I did lose to Nashburg at Atlanta. Right. And then I could be completely wrong, but I believe after that, we didn't lose to them again. So we kind of got over that bugaboo. At Atlanta, we also had beaten the new life from Mars, which was Schumacher and Chandler, state champ Little Murph. Oh, what yeah. up, boy? And so our perspective was we were beating the teams that we should, but I was so nervous every time we had to play Chico. Mike and I never played Beavers, but I knew we were on the same level of Beavers. I hadn't heard of Strange really because at that time in 2015, other than the West Coast, very similar to Beavers, they weren't playing as much. But fast forwarding to Nationals, they played us in pool play and just whooped us. And that was the first personal
Garrett
exposure
mentioned
to
that in the podcast episode where he was like, Dylan looked at me like, who are these guys?
Well, and the big reason, and it's just ingrained into my memory, is that was the first experience with body defense. I had never seen two athletic players that would put their body in such a perfect position, because what I took a lot of pride in throughout the 2015 season, and honestly, I believe what I was known for, is I was a great hitter. Like, I was a good server, but a great hitter. And very often, I mean, Tyler Chizik, Ryan Fitzgerald, really solid defensive players would feel lost against me. Mm-hmm. And then now I was in this pool play with Strange, who I believe the thing is, they were like the 3 or 4 seed out of the West. Like, so,
yeah,
four. Yeah, four. So we also was like, oh, we're the, unfortunately, we were the 2 seed from the Midwest, and we played the 4. We just thought we had the upper hand, and then it started off like, yeah, I would hit as hard as I could, and the ball would somehow be straight up in the air. And I was like, how did that happen?
What is happening?
Yeah, how is that happening? And it was just that next level of, oh my gosh, this is another team that their skill set was very different than our skill set, but I felt that Strange was definitely better.
But you've never seen that before, right?
Correct.
And that's the big thing, right? Exactly.
And not even on highlight videos. That's the other thing, because you mentioned highlight videos. Like, Strange Embrace, I hadn't seen him play before. So I think that it was just so shocking because, you know, we warmed up playing the rookies, and we had played the rookies a ton of times. We played, who else? I think we might have played Logan. Oh yeah, the cream cycle we played. So, but the style was so different from Strange, and that's something that manifested throughout that tournament, because they became legends at the tournament. You know, that round of 8 match against the rookies that ended 46-44, getting to the finals and playing Chico. I mean, Strange was not, again, this is the 4 seed from the West. Yeah. This is on no one's radar to make the finals, and they played in the finals against Chico, and it was just really relevant that, like, again, what I kept thinking over and over is just the West Coast is just a couple steps above everyone else at that time.
Guys, I'm going to plug, if you haven't listened to the Jared episode of Roundnet Legends, check it out on this channel, because we go through this entire thing. And I think that's, again, just how it was so great. It was just, you were so terrified all the time of new players. You're just like, who are these people? You know, nowadays I'd say, I mean, now I'm not as in tune, but you know, back in 2016, 17, 18, if I didn't know of the player, they probably weren't that good. But in 2015, that was not the case. You would show up and there would just be like, who's this guy? They're incredible. Yeah.
Well, and even in 2015 too, I think there still wasn't the level of consistency that within teams that we see these days. I mean, and now we were talking about teams like McGinney came out of nowhere in 2015, beat some really good teams and almost beat Strange. Like, they were, I believe they had match point in the round of 16 against Strange at that tournament. What happens if they convert on that match point? Like, you know, how far did they go? Rip beat Handsome Beavers in the round of 16 at that tournament, which I know Buddy was injured, but that, I mean, that was probably the most shocking result. You know, Handsome Beavers to that point in time, they only lost to Chico. They didn't lose to anyone else.
Yeah.
And they lost in the round of 16, and they weren't spike ball elite like that, but blew people's minds, you know?
So it's funny, right? You now have the hindsight bias. You're like, oh, next year they got round of 16 also. But that year, when I say, like, all year, it's just Chico's number one, who's number two? And then so you come out here and the number two team doesn't make top 8. You're like, what? What is happening?
Yeah.
But truthfully, they also, that was like the first time they traveled in the entire year. So back then it was like Chico would go and they would do some stuff. They would do the big ones, right? Origin Elite was everywhere. Nashburg was everywhere, right? Handsome Beavers, nope. You just saw them then. They played the West Tour and then there. And then Strange, same thing. Strange, you never saw them. as well as, you know, the team that beat you, Buns and Guns. That was like their first tournament or their second tournament. And you're like, all right, these are two incredible players that no one ever talks about because they're just over on the West Coast doing their own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that match in particular, exactly what you said, you know, I knew Cody, but I hadn't really seen Austin play. And to this day, I still think Austin was always criminally underrated when he played. I mean, strong, one of the strongest guys. I mean, especially towards 2016, because they played a little bit. His serve, I mean, it was like a firecracker. It was so, and athletic. I mean, he would be the guy that was diving, you know, and just racing. Yeah. And he was just a freak. he was just a freak of nature.
Really good, yeah.
He was really good. And that, and I remember at the time, like, because we were winning a lot and getting second and getting podiums, like, I left that match after we lost. And I was like, you know what? Like, that was a great match, which again, for 2015, Dylan, that never happened. I never was happy after a loss.
Yeah.
Except for that one. I was like, that was just a great, I mean, and a lot of people to this day, which of course I disagree with because I observe strange versus rookies, but a lot of people say that that was the best match of 2015 Nationals was Buns and Guns Elite. And yeah, because it was so much fun. Like, it was back and forth. Like, it was just, it was like probably my favorite memory of losing to that point.
I'm going to quick tangent. A lot of people say that, you know, the 2016 National Finals was like the best match ever.
Mm-hmm.
Buns and Guns versus Nashburg. I think it was round of eight or round of 16 at Nationals.
Round of eight.
That I think is actually like the best match of all time. That was so like amazing for the same reason.
Totally. I totally agree with you. And the other thing about that is, I'm not exactly sure why, but 2016 Nationals had so many great matchups that people forget about. Like, I see your perspective. I think Strange versus Two Guys was like one of the best matches of all time. People forget about that all the time.
We had four rounds in a row with incredible matches. We had Safi, Peter John, and Joey Zimmerman versus Beavers, right?
Beavers, yeah.
Ridiculous. Round of eight, we had Nashburg versus Buns and Guns. Next round, we had Two Guys versus Strange, and then we had the ridiculous finals. Like, 2016 Nationals had no right being as good as it was, but also it did. 2016, I'll probably have a video with this. It was the best competitive season we've ever had.
Peak of Roundout, absolutely.
It was the skill was just at the perfect level where everyone was athletic and skilled, but there were still rallies and plays. Serving was just on the come up, and there were like so many teams, right? I think like we were ranked in like number 20, and we were still like, I feel like nowadays, right, there are a lot of teams, but back then I think there were at least like 30 solid teams, and they were all very close. Right. And I think a different thing is close matches looked a little better back then, but like,
yeah,
right. Like, I remember just like it was just a ridiculous day. I don't know what to say. Like, I feel like we were like in the middle of the pack and there were so many, so many better teams than us. And it was just like a ridiculous show to watch. Like, all of the top 16 was like so good. Now we just have the 16 pro division. I mean, maybe if we had a 64 team bracket, it'd be different, but I don't know. I feel like I'm just rambling now. We lose it at a certain point. We're like, back then it felt like there were a lot of consistent teams. I don't know if like nowadays we have like 15 teams and then kind of some mashups that don't play very much. But back then it seemed like there were 35, 40 teams that were like, this is my partner. We play a lot. And so at Nationals, when everyone's there, you have all these matchups that you never would have expected. I think the other thing is people didn't travel as much. So you only see these teams every once in a while. And so you're so stoked every single time.
So that last point is exactly what I was going to say. I remember walking up to DC 2016, where Nationals were, massive field. And I mean, I could see in the distance, there was Buns and Guns right next to me. There was like, Ian Golombeski and Chris Place's team. Gob. Yeah, I mean, because they were just, and everyone was there. And what I remember the most, I don't know why, is the jerseys. Everyone had matching jerseys. There were like, to your point, there were like 30 insanely good teams all there that day with matching jerseys. And like family was like a ton. I just recall like a ton of family being there. I also, maybe because it was like a more central location than like Santa Monica. And then I also remember like they did the thing where everyone came over and watched the pro division do our first round matchups. Yes. And that was so hype. I just remember looking around, and that probably is still the biggest crowd I've ever had watching me play. And it was, I would say that later that day, 2016 Nationals had a big crowd, but like it just, everyone was there at the start of the day. So I looked around and it just seemed like there were hundreds of people watching our match. And it was like, that was like just the coolest feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, guys, to repeat what Dylan said, like, the first round of the Power Pools started before everyone else. So everyone went and watched, and you would cheer on your region. You had regional, like, you got regional bands, and that's what you're supposed to do.
That's right.
But right. So thinking about it now, right? In 2015 and 2016, there were 16 teams in the Power Pools, right? And nowadays, I'm just going to say, we only have a 16 team pro division. So nowadays, right, those Power Pools would be the whole division. Do you remember how many good teams were not in those Power Pools?
Yeah.
Like, so many. Maybe that's a case that we need to expand to more than 16 at our Nationals. But I think there's the pros and cons. But, like, I remember going in, you're like, wow, these are the Power Pools. Wow, there are so many good teams not in here. Right?
And that was a big thing for us. And why I always like tournaments that put a lot of pressure on you in pool play. I think that that's really important because if you go in, and I'm going to rewind really quickly to one of the biggest breakdowns I've ever seen from a team to 2015 Nationals, when Shrimp and Grits, who won Southeast Regionals, they went 0-4 in pool play, 0-7. And then in the crossover match against a very, very good, yes, but motivated nightly flip team, they lost to a co-ed team, to Jenna Coleman and Ian Golombeski. And I think that was what I loved about those crossovers and the fact that there were other teams in is because if you were cold and a team on the outside was hot, like they were going for your throat. I remember, like, and there were teams who weren't in the Power Pools who, you know, obviously they didn't get there because of their performance, but they were slighted. They wanted to take you out. And so that was like such a cool, like, hybrid experience. It's like, yes, you wanted to get a good seed from the Power Pools, but if you didn't, oh man, now you have a really good team to play in the first round.
From my whole, so this is, it's going to sound like just me hyping it up, but like from my personal experience, 2015 Nationals, we get the 7 seed. So we didn't have a crossover, and we're like, thank God. Obviously not thank God. We lost in the worst seeded upset of all time. but thank God at the time. We're like, oh, we don't have a crossover. We can sit for 4 hours and until our next match. And then, but the next year at 2016, we were in the Power Pool. We were just like, I'm going to say this, Origin, Elite, and Vengeance were known for kicking the crap out of teams in pool play so they could get the best point diff in the world. But we did that at Nationals 2016 because we weren't in the Power Pool. Our worst loss was like 15-5. We had multiple 15-1s. And so we came into that crossover ready to go. And we beat Bolivia like 15-7 because we're just like, we're getting in that. We're going hard. And it's exact. You just described my exact experience. Like, you worked so hard in pool play because you wanted to avoid it. And then everyone else is like, I'm working my ass off to take that seed.
Absolutely. And this is an interesting point that I just want to zoom out for a second and talk about this, because I feel like it's not talked about enough, whether it comes to Chico, whether it comes to CS, and I'm going to put OV in that boat as well, because especially in early 2016, Chris and I won like 8 straight tournaments, is it's called the burden of success, where there is you're successful and you win a lot. And then there's just this added layer of pressure that's onto you, because you're expected to make the finals. You're expected to win tournaments. And with that is mentally draining. And sometimes I think that's how teams take advantage of you, because you almost become a little complacent, especially in pool player, especially in those early rounds. And it's funny because you say, yes, OV was known for that for sure. But I don't know if you remember Boston 2016.
I remember.
Maybe we talked about this. Chris and I lost like three games in pool play. Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Yeah. You guys killed us in pool play. And Chris and I were just having like a bad day, but two things happened that day. Number one is like, it almost in a weird way felt good. Cause we were like, oh wow. We're losing, but it's like this pressure of like, oh, they're going to go in as a top seed in the tournament. Like they're OV, they're going to win. It almost felt nice, which I think came to fruition because we ended up winning that tournament after having a terrible pool play. But then also like it was just very easy for us to take our foot off the gas and become a little complacent eventually. And I think that's where some teams, and not just in 2016, not just in 2021, but beyond, there are going to be teams that take advantage of that. So I think, and a real quick last thing is like, in the SRA group, someone talked about like the most valuable skill in round net. And I really think that mental, you know, perseverance and mental, like having control of yourself on the court, staying focused on your goals is really important, because we're talking about a sport where at the highest level, margin for error is very low, right? And so you have to be really on physically, but also mentally, and not let mistakes compound. Yep. And I just think about that when I think about like situations like you, like you're the type of team in 2016, you're going to jump down the throat of a pro team who is really struggling to play. And therefore now mentally they're getting less and less confident. And you guys are an all time confident level. Like it makes a lot of sense that you beat Bolivia badly, because you know, you're just like on opposite, like you're just in two completely different headspaces. And I just think that that's such an underrated part of our sport.
And it's truthfully, it was exacerbated by the quick games in pool play. You have to be, you gotta be in there. I mean, the games were to 15, right? You gotta be focused and you gotta do it. And for most tournaments, that's still the case, but pool play is especially tough. And I guess I think a separate thing, it's really challenging when you guys got the 9 seed, right?
Yeah, we got the 9
win, and that's so frustrating. I remember, but similar Summer Spike earlier that year, Strange got the 9 seed, and they made the finals. Same thing, and it's like, it's frustrating because like, in most cases, you can bring it back, and that's where I think we see times where CS starts chilling because they can bring it back, and I think, you know, maybe that's just a problem with our pool play system. We're like, that woke you guys up. I think at a certain point it became like, maybe after you do that 2 or 3 times, it's like, oh, we don't even need to really try and pool play. You know,
yeah,
a threshold going where it's like a couple times it's like, oh guys, we got to work hard. But if you keep not working hard and then it happens, you're eventually going to be like, oh, well, why are we doing this?
Totally. And I think to your point, like over the years, like those Titan teams have been accused of that. Like Chico has been accused of that. CS has been accused of that. And there are times, admittedly, that OV was accused of it. But to rewind to an earlier question about like, did you always feel like Elite was the number two? OV was the number two? No. And that's the thing is I would always tell Chris, like, we had a very specific skill set that allowed us to win in the sports. But we were also very vulnerable to a lot of teams. And Strange was a team that we matched up honestly pretty well against them, but just once in a blue moon, like they had our number. So we were not, like, I always viewed us as not on the same level as Chico, as CS, as like kind of, we can mess around, do what we want in pool play, because I knew that as strong as we were in terms of the skills that you need to be successful in round net at that time, there were a lot of holes that we had. We were not good defensively. Occasionally we really struggled at setting. Mental game was tough at times. So if we had teams that were really good defensively, like that was at times a real struggle for us. So I think that that's why that felt so different in pool play is we were literally trying, but and we struggled, and people didn't believe it. They would come up and they'd be like, guys, would you
can you try?
Don't mess around. Don't get a 9 seed. And I was like, guys, I promise you, like, we just aren't playing well today.
I need to share the funniest thing. So how this game opened, I think we beat that. I think we went up 4-0.
Yep.
You served to us. We put it away. I dropped one of you, dropped the other, raised my hand. Chris yelled drop, and it wasn't a drop. So you came running in, and it went right past you. And you looked at each other, and you could both just be like, what is happening today? It was the funniest thing.
I'm not sure if that's the same time, but one of my, like, the number one moment from pool play is at some point, Chris and I turned to ourselves during the cream cycle match, because that was the last pool play game of pools, and we just started laughing at it. Like, just laughing. Because
that might have been it. We were up 4-0, and literally, Chris yelled drop, yelled it, and it wasn't a drop. And so it went just straight past you.
I think that was just the moment that we both looked at each other and was like, because again, I know that I had a tendency to get on my cameras. Like, I had a tendency to get on Chris, but like, we looked at each other and I wasn't even mad. I was just like, this is the type of day this is starting to be right now. And so it has burned into my memory. It must have been that. Yeah.
That's so funny. Oh. That's so funny. Because I remember that vividly too. Because, I mean, at the time, right, we were stoked. We were having a bad season. And we were like, oh, awesome. Going up 4-0. Feeling pretty good here. Anyway, let's quickly try to go to where this has been long and it's great. We're going to probably – this is one episode where we're probably going to have to do a part two.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
But so I want to just quickly – we just kind of jump between 2015 and 16 there. I want to know about – Origin Vengeance and the formation. So my quick summary is that, right, 2015, you play with Mike Hammersley, and I'm sorry we didn't talk about him enough because he was just an awesome player for 2015.
Tremendous player.
But so 2016, you come in. Also, you come in as toast for two tournaments, and apparently Travis and Coleman didn't know that you was toast. But then you guys eventually unveil as Origin Vengeance, and I mean, I'm just curious, like, how you formed together. Obviously, so I think my questions are like, right, Chris was up and coming at the time. He was landed in the honorable mention, so he was a top 30 player. And what was interesting is, I think watching, right, it was like, oh, they're just forming because they're the two best. And then we're also like, oh, but Drucker's definitely a little better. So I'm just curious kind of how you guys two formed.
Yeah, so a lot of it was what you just said. Chris was really up and coming, especially towards the end of 2015. And at the time, a lot of OG members will remember this, but we talk about power a lot. Like, we talked about power with Patrick Drucker, and obviously there's Peter John, but the intensity and the ferociousness, I guess, of which Chris did everything in Roundnet was just, I think, at another level. Like, he just had this incredibly powerful serve. Even to this day, I think you give him a set to his right hand, he's one of the most like powerful hitters in the sport. Towards the end of 2015, I was kind of looking at the sport and looking at what really thrived in the sport, and serving and hitting, that was kind of the come up in 2015. And I still say Mike was probably the second best setter in the world behind Skylar Bowles. Tremendous setter, really good defensively, but
Weird to serve in the game though.
Weird to serve. And his big windup, and then he would drop with like the back of his hand sometimes. I was like, dude, what are you doing? But anyway, but what I was looking at is, as I told you, like, I knew Origin Elite couldn't beat the top teams. Like, we would have to play really, really well, and Chico, Beavers, they would have to be so off. So from a pragmatic standpoint, again, I was competitive. I wanted to get to that next level. So I saw hitting and serving as the two biggest skills that generated breaks that allowed you to win. And so Chris really thrived in that. His skill set was much better than Mike in that way. So we had experimented with a few mashup tournaments actually prior to being toast. Chris and I had played in this small tournament called Hermitage, where we actually beat Monkey Business, which later in the season, Mike and I had a catastrophic breakdown against them in Midwest Regional Final and lost. Mm-hmm. So going into 2016, there were a couple factors. Number one, Mike wasn't as into the sport as I and Chris were, which was a big one. Number two is Chris and I were best friends. We lived together. We were super, super close. And we just had so much fun. We had so much fun traveling together and just talking about the sport. And at the time, like, this is something I'm pretty open about, like, just really struggling in my life. Chris was too. So we found this, like, human connection through this sport of round net. And it just made a lot of sense. It just, like, why wouldn't you want to travel the country playing the sport and succeeding with your best friend? So that's really how it came across.
Can you share what you guys were getting vengeance on?
Honestly, I don't, Chris's favorite movie is V for Vendetta. And there's not a whole lot behind it. Like, we just really liked the V, and we were like, what can we think of? And vengeance and OV for us just kind of like rolled off the tongue. Yeah. And that's what we kind of became known as, is like, yeah, you know, people, you, it's funny, is you would always refer to it as vengeance, but like outside of Mike White, everyone would say OV. Like, we were on the bracket as OV. So, no real name for that, I guess. Yeah.
I can't say OV because then I have to say OI and OEA.
Yep.
All the other ones. Yeah, I guess
that's right.
Okay, good. I mean, so it's funny going in. It's like they didn't have that many losses last year. I don't really know what they're getting vengeance on people for. But anyway, so you guys completely like tripled down on everything. Like,
yeah,
you guys went to a billion tournaments every weekend. You guys were traveling.
Yep.
Ridiculous amounts to go to two tournaments, and like, is what I guess my question is, like, looking back at it, do you think you were doing too much at the time?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I look back on it now, and just to give you guys a little bit of concept, I personally played in 33 tournaments that year. I think Chris was a little bit behind me at the time, just because I would play a little bit more mashups. But if you think 33, there's only 52 weeks in a year, right? Like, that's just it's a lot of tournaments. But at the time, you know, where Chris and I were, you know, spikeball was the most important thing in our lives. And our jobs were a distant second. Our relationships were a distant second. You know, it was about spikeball. And I think what really, again, just helped is we were best friends. So we didn't mind these 12-hour car rides to Atlanta and back, like these 14-hour car rides to Connecticut. The weekend of Mother's Day on Thursday, Chris and I both had really bad days of work. We were like, hey, do you want to go to the South Carolina tournament tomorrow? Oh. We drove there 16 hours. We arrived at 9:30 a.m. Check-in, we were late for check-in. Tournament started at 10. We lost to Bolivia, and then we spent like an hour afterwards with everyone and then drove right back
for Mother's Day. That's dangerous.
Very much so. Very, very, very much so. And that's why, to your point, it was too much. And then a big thing that I, you know, maybe we'll get to, or we'll save it for part two, is when 2017 came around, I was having issues with my back. I was having issues with my shoulder. I actually tore my labrum. And it was due to just an incorrect motion over and over and over. And so here I was at age, what was I in 2016? 24 or so, 24. And my body was just getting beat up. Yeah. Because you have to also compound this with our practices, scrimmages, yeah, that resembled tournaments.
Yeah.
Like, I would come home, my body almost didn't have enough time to heal before we had to get back in a car. And that's the other thing. We were in a car for like 12 to 14 hours.
What, a little Camry?
Yeah, the Camry to get to all these tournaments. Yeah. So, and on a serious note, that is one thing that I would tell the players who are a little bit younger, is like, you just have to make sure that even if you feel invincible, you know, at age 18, 20, 22, you're not.
I think I still have, random shoulder pain, and I didn't even play that much compared to how
exactly
much I play. And I still have resident shoulder pain, resident hip pain, whatever.
Totally. And I think, like, that's why, I mean, obviously my career is in health and wellness, and I believe so much in that, but I really, I implore people to reach out to, you know, Jarrett, to myself, to Travis Core, to talk about not just, you know, how can I get in shape to perform well in tournaments, but how can I protect my body? What is that? What is my dynamic stretching routine, static stretching routine afterwards look like so that I can play at the best of my ability? And don't play 33 tournaments. Like, that's just what I'm going to tell you is don't do it.
I don't want to sound like I was coming at you, but I think it was more indicative of, at the time, a lot of, like, myself included, a lot of people, you know, you and I are at a very different point nowadays with how we view RoundNet, right? We have clearly a passion for it and we do all these things, but at that point, it's an obsession, right?
Yeah.
Right. I would do the same things, except instead of playing, it was content. Like, I wouldn't, 2016, I didn't sleep very well because in the summer I would work, right? I would work my job 8 to 5. I would get home. I would quickly eat dinner and try to write an article for 2 hours and then go play for 2 hours and blah, blah, blah. Like, it wasn't healthy. And, and, you know, so I'm right there with you, but I think it was just, I would imagine that people feel the same way now. I've been so kind of removed from that, that it's hard to imagine, but I remember I was always thinking about RoundNet all the time.
Yep.
And I mean, I think 2015 and 2016, I think that was 2016. Like, that was the year where it was just all RoundNet all the time. And I guess that just makes me curious, like, right, people are looking at us, right, 6-5 years later, and we still have the passion for it, but it's very different. And it's interesting how that kind of cycle flows.
Absolutely. And to your point, I also, you know, I haven't been traveling for the past year. So, but I do try and stay very informed on tournaments, and I'm not going to name names, but there are some players who I know about that I do worry about them, because I want players to have such a long career in RoundNet. But I also know that as I get a little older, like, trust me, even your biggest passions, burnout rate still applies. You know, burnout rate, and in terms of your body, like, injury rate, it's mm-hmm. still, you can get burned out of things that you enjoy. And from a firsthand experience, let me tell you that is horrible mentally when that happens, because then now that you had this passion, this hobby that you love, that you poured hours into, and now it feels like a chore to continue that. And that is just, again, another piece of advice for young players, is just being able to be introspective enough to recognize that and just make sure that your balance, it's just like anything in life. You have to have boundaries. You have to have balance. Otherwise, it is going to come around and kick you in the butt. It will. So hopefully, you know, we can get more education surrounding that. And, you know, I think our takes, you know, you talk about it all the time. Like, there were times in 2016 that I would look at Chris or an origin guy, I'd be like, dude, I don't know how Anthony and Mike do it. Like, you guys were just churning out content nonstop while also playing. You guys were, I mean, Creamsicle was very active.
So you talk about the burnout. I think that's why I stopped playing, right? I was doing too much. And I'm like, and I think the other thing, the worst thing is I was doing a lot. I think also selfishly, I don't know if people realize how much me and Anthony and the whole team, Ian, was doing back then. Because I was thinking recently, I was like, oh, the season's coming back. We have to work on the PR. I don't want to do that anymore. Do people know that if Ezra and I just stopped doing it, the PR wouldn't happen? Like, right? It's not this thing that just happens all the time. It's a lot of work. And shout out to Ezra for doing that. But at the time, right, I was doing the content stuff, which I really cared about. I really wanted to get better. And that entire season, I probably played 4 or 5 days a week. And on top of, and of course, in the summer, on top of working all day at a job, doing content, traveling on the weekends. And I think at the end of the year, right, we went to, all year, we didn't have any good wins. I went to East Regionals, felt terrible. And I was just like, I don't think I want to play anymore. And I think that wasn't really to do with playing. It was more about the lifestyle I was living. And it was conducive to playing healthily. It became this thing where I wanted to get better, and then I became frustrated when I didn't. So I didn't know what to do, you know? And of course, playing is what got cut out.
Absolutely. And I think that is If anyway, if you guys are listening to this back, I think that is just such a powerful statement. It's like, it was the lifestyle, really. It was how everything kind of snowballed together. Because I mean, you would admit right now, like, it, your life lacked balance. Like, you lacked balance, and balance in the sense of just like giving your body a break, giving your mind a break, not writing so much.
It's really the mind. It's really the mind. I think it was just going way. I mean, on top of that, you know, had some undiagnosed anxiety at the time, I'm sure, and maybe some other things. And I think it all just compounds and all, right, instead of, and but all you're thinking about is this next piece of content, this next tournament, getting better and round net. That's all you're thinking of, you know, and your mind is just going 24/7.
And yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, again, that's it's so important for people to hear that, because I don't think anyone talked about that in 2016. No one said, like, how does Mike White do this? How does he play and compete and churn out content and also work? And also, you practicing all the time. Like, I think it's just almost like sometimes we don't realize that we're human. We're not robots. We can't just constantly do this over and over and not expect repercussions to happen. Mm-hmm. So, and I, again, we probably don't have time for this episode, but that's exactly what happened to me in 2017. I'll be honest. It was a very similar story. Is my body was breaking down. I'll be honest that how 2016 Nationals ended was really challenging on me, in terms of what my future, you know, as an athlete was. Because if you look at early 2016, Chris and I dominating everything. And then later in 2016, I mean, we stumbled to the finish line, lost in the round of 16 at Chicago, lost in the round of 32 at Nationals. And I was just like, what is happening?
So that has to lead to a lot of soul searching, because that's how I felt. You know, I think truthfully, right, we didn't do too great at I think we got T9th at East Regionals. But I remember the feeling I had was like, I think I like was stressed out about it all week. I was a little tired. I come in and we do terrible. And I'm like, what have I been doing all year? And I'm sure you had a similar kind of thought where you come into this big tournament, you don't do as well. And it really just kicks you in the ass and is like, where do you go from here?
And that was exactly it. You know, it was, is this, because again, ultimately zooming out and looking at a more macro level, like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Am I supposed to be traveling? Am I supposed to be competing? And you start to have these questions. And that's really what happened for me going into 2017 is, you know, I started dating who's still my current partner. I was getting not older, but, you know, I was about, you know, heading into my mid-20s. You know, that's when people, you know, start to focus on things that are more life focused, and just all the things snowballed. That's how it usually happens, right? Like I was traveling way too much. My body was hurting. I wasn't performing as much as I wanted to. And then now other interests from life are starting to take form. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, like where I am personally very happy at what's happening in today's round net, although it's uncomfortable, and I know it's uncomfortable for a lot of people, I was pretty frustrated with where the sport was at the end of 2016 in terms of, you know, I tell this story a lot where my last tournament that I played before my hiatus was with Sean Boyer. It was super fun. It was Flurry. But I remember playing with Sean, and I try and be very, again, like I said, pragmatic, but that was the one time I was like, we're going to win this tournament. There's no question about it. We are going to win this tournament. And other than maybe a matchup or two, we dominated. We really dominated. But in the back of my mind, I remember like hitting those final few serves against Tyler and Jared and being like, oh my God, my shoulder. And then I remember like trying to play defense and just be like, dude, what am I that was like when it was becoming desperate, you know. So that layer added on to everything that I was doing, and you know, that's what ultimately led to me saying, you know, this currently it is not right for me. And real quick, I do want to kind of extrapolate that trajectory, because obviously I came back to the sport. Obviously I had a 2019 season, a 2018 season, played very, very well, fell in love with co-ed, and it was awesome. But I think that is an important message, is that whatever you feel like you need to do with your life in that moment, to kind of take ownership over that. And if that means stepping back from things because you feel stressed, overwhelmed, anxious, just know that that's okay. Just know that you are able to do that. And if you notice yourself getting burnt out from tournaments, but you're worried, especially about what other people may think, what are people going to say if I stop playing? What are people going to say if I kind of drop out for a little bit? Ultimately, you got to do what's right for you, right? And knowing that, hey, if you figure it out, you can always come back. You know, I think that's what I love about this community, is like, I came back and I still remember, dude, the first few tournaments in 2018, and like the amount of people that like came up to me and was like, dude, we're so happy to see you. Like, that felt amazing. And I think that that's something that we still have in our community. Yeah. And that gives me confidence in telling that message. Like, if you need a break, like, take a break, man. Yeah. If you're struggling in life and it's manifesting in Spikeball around that, like, just feel free to make the decision that's right for you. Like, that is something that I wish I could just tell, like, ingrain that, implant that in every 22-year-old's head. It's just, it is okay to do that.
And I think, to add on, I love what you said. What made a difference for me is that, you know, obviously I'm now a Spikeball employee, so I have Spikeball with me all the time. But like, it just, at that point where I was posting all the time, I was going to everything, it feels like this thing you don't have control over, right? And the truth is, you don't have to go to this next tournament. You don't have to do this thing. And I think, and right, and I know you feel it in every fiber of your being that you have to, but the truth is you don't. And I
absolutely,
that's where I feel good here. When I went and played a tournament a few weeks ago, I went because I wanted to play. There was no anything going on. Talking with Dylan right now, this isn't I should probably make a rally podcast. I haven't done one in a while. This is, I want to do this. And I think whenever you're thinking, feeling overwhelmed, it's really hard, but separate yourself really from the have to's and the want to's and the expectations, and know that the people around you care, and you'll be okay if you take some breaks. And if you ever feel that, like, I need to do this, I need to do that, I need to go to that, you know, it may be time to reflect on it. It may be okay. You may be driven and passionate, but make sure it's coming from a healthy place and that you're aware from it.
Totally, man. I totally agree.
Yeah. So I think we just ended this podcast with a little therapy session. Hopefully you guys can take some of that. But I think that's a good place to wrap up. I know we're certainly going to have to do a part two of this, because I have so many questions. I didn't even talk about your sons, which I think is going to be a fun topic to go through. And we got tons of stuff. We literally didn't even get into 2017. We just talked about 2015, 2016. So it's crazy. I talked about this with Becca, where like, I think of like 2017, like a couple years ago, right? Nope. 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. Like, no, we talked about less time than like we have left, which would be pretty cool. So anyway, Dylan, anything else? Any closing thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, man. I think that I kind of, what I referenced, because this is going to be coming out sooner rather than later, is, you know, our sport's still new. I think that's still the message that I want to send across to our current players, is patience is absolutely a virtue. You're allowed to feel what you feel. I tell people, like, that's what I coach people on. You're allowed to feel what you feel, but just know that we are in the infancy stages of what is going to be a tremendous, tremendous sport. And we're all working super hard, even though we don't always align in our vision, we're all working really hard to make that vision come to fruition, right? So I know sometimes, especially with 2021, there's been, you know, different mixed opinions about the rule set, but just know that there's growing pains in every sport, and we're going to get there, and it's going to be tremendous if you just focus on rolling with the punches, doing what you can, and just adapting, right? Like, hey, 2021 rules are set. You can either adapt to them and work on them and embrace them, or you can, frankly, complain and maybe get left behind. So the choice is yours.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great thing to say. I love when you posted that, because it is true. Like, when you're arguing about what way to grow the sport is better, you guys just got to relax for a second and realize you both want it. You both want to grow the sport. Just huge. All right. Cool. I'm also just exhausted. That was a nice long conversation.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
All right. Before I do the outro, do you have anything you could share with the listeners, where to find you, et cetera?
Yeah. So I currently am not a player consistently anymore, but what I do is I do a lot of commentary. I do a lot of analysis. I like to consider myself, as Mike White said, Stephen A. insider. I love like breaking news and stuff. And I do it primarily right now via Instagram. So at Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N underscore Fogarty, F-O-G-A-R-T-Y 1, Dylan Fogarty 1. That's my RoundNet Instagram. So if you guys want to follow me, I do stories, I do posts, I do IGTVs, and I link them there. And I have a lot of fun with people that ask questions, and I love talking RoundNet. So head over there if you guys are interested.
I was going to ask what's the worst take you've gotten on that, but we'll save that for later.
Yeah, we'll save it for next time.
What's the worst take you got? All right. Awesome. Thank you again for joining me. This has been so fun. I'm stoked. So to our listeners, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. If you're watching on YouTube, I'd love if you give this a like, because it just lets me know you like these and to keep them coming. And if you have any feedback, please let me know as well. Of course, this is a podcast, so if you're listening to this on any podcast feature, just hit that subscribe button and you won't miss out on great stuff, especially the part two, whenever that comes out between us two, because you won't want to miss it. And the last thing, I have a little guest list of people I want to do, but I'm also curious what you guys think. So again, in the comments, let me know if there's any guests that you definitely want to hear from, because I'm open to that. But to wrap it up, thank you again for Dylan. Thank you to all for listening, and we hope to see you next time.